Thanks for listening and for being a part of Jason Q's Citizen and Friends on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the second hour of the Jason Q Citizen and Friends program, and it's great to know that the rally season is back on. It commenced last weekend. It was a terrific event, and the events are expanding. We spoke with Brad, the proprietor of the Cali or the Caledonian Hotel over at Singleton just yesterday, and we talked about the Freedom Ball that's going to be held there in November, which is a terrific event. It will feature lots of well-known people in the community, including Senator Gerard Rennick will be coming down from Queensland, which is wonderful, to attend the event. Now, in 2021, we realized, even back in 2020, we realized it was the community groups that led the way towards the so-called resistance. There were groups such as my A Million Mums for Informed Consent. There was Adam Gibson's Parents with Questions. And there was my next guest, Michael Gray Griffith, and Cafe Lockout. But what we're seeing now is that there are more and more professional groups that are organizing, including Doctors Against Mandates, which is kind of a bit of a misnomer because it should be called All Doctors Are Meant to Be Opposed to Mandates. However, there is a brand new group that's out there that's getting together, and they've just released a press release that I'd like to read to you as part of the introduction to this hour, where I'm going to speak with Michael shortly about the people that he's met on the tour and just where he expects to head as we move towards 2023 and the fight continues for us to regain what has been taken from us and to also ensure that this never happens again. So it was the Doctors Against Mandates that said on 2 September 2022, the Chief Health Officer, Public Health Direction mandating COVID-19 vaccination requirements for workers in healthcare settings was revoked in the state of Queensland. That announcement was made the day before by the Minister for Health, the Honourable Yvette Daff. Whether this had anything to do with the Chief Health Officer and his legal team being presented in the preceding fortnight with affidavits from our group of doctors, as well as six expert witness testimonies full of data, is speculation. Correlation does not mean causation, as is often said these days. However, the complete revocation of the CHO Public Health Direction mandate has not relieved restrictions and mandates on a vast number of health professionals in Queensland. The Hospital Employment Directive of 1221 of Queensland Health from 30 September 21 remains in effect, and the mandate means unvaccinated staff cannot resume or reapply for their public health jobs. It also means that thousands of staff who are not up to date with their boosters are in breach as well. Additionally, Queensland government wording encourages all health professionals to get their gene-based vaccines and boosters, and in the Health Minister's press release, now is the right time to transition responsibilities for managing the vaccination requirements of workers in private hospitals, primary care, and private allied health to those employers. So far, it appears that several private health employers are continuing mandates and are excluding staff who believe risk-benefit analysis means they cannot give informed consent. A vaccine mandate still applies for working in aged care facilities and with disabled people on the NDIS. Therefore, after discussion with our legal team, we are resolved to commence a new legal action to overturn Queensland Health's HED of 1221, which would allow the evidence to be presented to a judge in court, and if successful, set a strong legal precedent for Commonwealth jurisdictions. Let the medical evidence see the light of day in the Supreme Court. Onward we go. It is the same as when senators like Gerard Rennick and Malcolm Roberts ask Professor John Skerritt of the TGA why he is not concerned by extremely high record numbers of death reports from the COVID vaccines that doctors, nurses and families who report them to the database of adverse events notification of the TGA believe are valid, which is currently 938 and rising. Does the TGA only think 13 are caused by the vaccines and dismisses the other 925? And Professor Skerritt simply replies with a dismissive hand-waving argument of correlation does not prove causation. But timing is everything. Correlation does matter, especially when closely timed and in high numbers. People making those reports thought the timing implicated the vaccines. The timing of the dropping of the Queensland CHO's mandate covering private practice so you wouldn't have to face the evidence in the Supreme Court is highly suspicious. But as the update states, there's more work to do. The government avoided being tested in court, but are still pushing the mandates as much as they can by encouraging employers to enforce them on their workers. The Doctors Against Mandates case has to take it to the next level and deal with the Queensland health mandate, which is all the private business mandates now hinge upon. This should have a ripple effect across the nation. Justice is not cheap. Many of the doctors have had less or to no income over the past year, and they're asking you to please visit doctorsagainstmandates.com. Why not give TNT Radio a follow? We are on all the major social platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Gab, and Getter. Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Count on us to deliver the facts.
I can rely on that.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Something unique about Australia is our down-to-earth approach to changes in our lifestyle and community. Sure, we've gone on the Great Big Rally Tour, which is fairly new in our history, and as we in Australia have not had that much to protest about in the modern era, that is our lifetimes, certainly not those who grew up in the 80s or later. What is unique to Australians is our ability to just immerse ourselves in our local communities and start conversations. Cafe Lockout has led this new discovery in our local community by taking its show on the road. Many stories have been told and much has been observed and learned. The face and voice of the group, Michael Gray Griffith, joins me today to share more of those stories, future events, and his own discoveries along the way as Australia faces its greatest ever test. When do we collectively stand up against the system that is pulling us into a new and unacceptable direction that has resulted in tyranny, segregation, coercion, mental illness, the shortening of our lives, and now a new agenda resulting in out-of-control inflation, food shortages, rising interest rates, and a climate change agenda that is deliberately pushing up energy prices. Michael, welcome back to Jason Q, Citizen and Friends.
Hey, good evening, Jason. How are you?
Yeah, look, terrific. I feel every day more and more confident in all the work that we're doing collectively. And we're all off out there, you know, making differences, reporting back, interviewing new people, bringing more and more people into the fore. And I feel like that the establishment that has put this upon us over the last 3 years is starting to backpedal, and it's starting to show now they have to work in the moment and think on their feet. And I really don't think they're as capable as that their size and scope and resources suggest. So I feel terrific. How about yourself?
I think the same. I was in Traralgon the other day, which is a town in the Gippsland. And I was at a meeting of about 250 people who were getting incredibly organized. And lots of men in the group, everyone saying, "Where the men?" Well, the men were there. It just refilled all my hope tanks. I thought, wow, this is just one town, and you're hearing it everywhere. I think they've severely underestimated Australians. And our ability to finally go, no. So I'm the same.
Oh, look, that's wonderful. I mean, and that is one of the questions I had been asking for a very long time is where are all the men? That is just music to my ears. And it's literally, I can feel shivers running up and down my spine.
Well, I'll tell you what it was. I turned up and I was there, only supposed to be there for one night, and I met this group of men in a farm shed. And they're talking plants, and they've done videos, and they're really, as a part of this meeting, they're really active. And then they said, "Can you please hang around? There'll be a bigger group tomorrow." And I'm going back there in a month or a couple of weeks for an even bigger meeting. And so I did stick around. And it's just giving me shivers now thinking of them. They're amazing. You know, this is just one town, you know.
You know that... I like to bring it up from time to time, especially in this period now, because there's a lot of mental illness, and it's even that's the wrong term. I would call it more situational depression in many people, that it's all becoming too much to bear. And this, of course, means that when the situation changes, that can go away. But we are learning new skills in how we handle all of this. But living in these difficult times, we are finding new ways to make life great for ourselves. And the process is was beautifully spoken the other day by one of our my co-presenters, Jeremy Mill, who's based in South Africa. And he explained the idea of a red pill delivers the truth, a blue pill, you know, people just living in this fantasy that they're being served. He said, but what's really important about being red-pilled is not to be black-pilled, which means that you become nihilistic and you give up. It's more important to become white-pilled and find your best life. And what's happening, and you've just explained that in similar words from what's happening in Terowie, you have 250 people that are organized now. They're clearly becoming self-sufficient. And this seems to be the part of it that now, even in the world turning upside down, we still get to live our best lives. It just so happens that they're new lives, new ideas. It has to be the best time to be alive right now.
I think so. You know, and what I really loved was there was a quote in the latest Rocky film. I saw the latest Rocky film thinking it's going to be crap, but I'll watch it anyway. It was actually really good. And Rocky actually says, it's not about how hard you get hit, it's if you get up. Now, the freedom movement got severely hit by the loss of the election. We didn't do as well as we thought.
Yes.
But these people are picking themselves up and they've shrugged it off. And there, you know, there's one big group here in Melbourne. There's lots of freedom groups want to go to Dan Andrews' electorate and knock on everybody's door, and so they just want to get him out. And they're all doing it. They're all getting organised. They're coming back. They've taken the punches that we had, the loss of the Kill the Bill here, and that's what I love. That is the hope. Okay, we might be losing the battles, but these guys are going to win the war.
Yeah, Michael, that's it's unbelievably inspiring, and what I'd like to be able to do is look at some of the work that you've done in terms of the people that you've met, and because anyone who's not familiar with Cafe Locked Out, you can find you guys on social media, on Facebook, and you can also go direct and Rumble, and you can go to the website cafelockedout.com, I believe. Not is that correct?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, and we also built our own. There's a great man called Havel, who was the Czechoslovakian playwright and he became the prime minister. He wrote an essay called The Power and the Powerless, which got him locked up for 10 years. And I read this essay. And he goes, if you're in this situation where, you know, like in a totalitarian system and they won't publish your work in the newspaper, set up your own newspaper. So in the last 7 weeks, we've set up our own Facebook called clo.social, which looks like Facebook, feels like Facebook, but it's not. It's ours. And a lot of the freedom movement are setting up pages on it. But it's like a fort. If you get kicked off the other social media, well, you're not going to get kicked off this because it's ours. And so counterculture is building everywhere. And one young man I met, called Jeremy, I met at this Terowie group, and I'm always interested in talking to the young people. He set up a thing called Silk Road, where he's in basically giving people the tools to set up their own community gardens in different towns and own farmers markets, and it's working. Now, he worked from Coca-Cola, he left that, then he lost his jobs because of the mandate, but instead of giving in to despair, He's doing this program to help empower people to take their lives back. Wonderful man. Wonderful young man. He's only 28. So I did an interview with him, and now we did another interview with him trying to promote his work everywhere. I think the age of apathy is dying, and I think we're going to be the better for it. I really do.
Oh, look, I couldn't have said it better myself. I think that's exactly, you've uncovered the story behind the story is that through absolute, the necessity being the mother of all invention, we have finally removed the shackles of apathy and realized that the only person that can make my destiny work for me is me, myself. And if this really is a movie and we're watching it unfold, then who better to write the script than yours truly? What a perfect way to put it. And what's going to be interesting, Michael, is that we're going to talk about some of the interviews that you've done, and it's almost going to be a process of how you've uncovered the despair, you've uncovered the systematic breaches through professional organisations, through various doctors and politicians and even funeral directors who've all revealed it all. But I'm guessing that in this conversation, you're going to, like you did, you're going to introduce us to more characters such as Jeremy now, because this almost feels like the direction you're headed. We're in a somewhat of a recovery, but we're also in a war, and it's happening simultaneously. And just by the fact that you're going to be better at it is going to make us more resourceful, and our opponents who are telling us that we can't do it will have nothing to take us down with, because we'll be thriving whilst they're suffering, even when we're headed into high interest rates, high inflation, food famines. None of that's going to matter.
No. There's a famous old text, I can't remember the writer's name, it's from China, called The Art of War.
And Sun Tzu.
Sun Tzu, yeah. Now, he says one form of war, which is the most dangerous, is basically the war where the person you're at war against doesn't even know you're at war against, that they're at war. And I think that's the difference with our tribes now. People are waking up and going, okay, we're at war. And other people are going, what? Against two. Doesn't matter against two. And that's what's happening now. And I see these people and they get it. And the grit of their ancestors who built our culture on this hard land is still in the DNA of these people now. And it's coming to the forefront. And so I think in the first trip around Australia, I interviewed people and we identified problems. But now we're getting ready to set off again. And I'm interested to find out who are we now as Australians? Because COVID blew away all the mythology of Australia. It's all gone. Mm. And now the soul and identity of Australia is up for grabs. And we have one force who have a vision. I don't know who they are really. And their vision is tyranny and basically enslavement. That's what it is. And now these other people everywhere are rising up and going, no, we're not doing that. But at the moment, what they haven't done as yet is produced an alternative vision. And I think that's going to happen. I think they're going to create it together and going, we're going this way. Come up with value systems. That's why I hear a lot about common law. I think common law might be the law of that new vision. And I think once other Australians see that there's two options, they're going to take our option, because our option is the better option. We're selling a better Australia, one where of inclusion, freedom, self-determination, all these things, and maybe small government, which would be great. And so I'm just really full of hope at the moment, and just I feel honoured to be a small documenter within this great revolution.
Oh, look, wonderful. We are going to have to pause for a break. So much more to talk about. This is a terrific day to be listening to TNT Radio. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
TNT Radio's Jeremy Now.
Jeffrey Epstein actually is not all that significant. He's just a cog in the machine.
He's like in a managerial position. I wouldn't put him at the top at all. Yeah, he's sort of like middle management, I guess you could say, for this particular group that I'm writing about. Well, maybe for some people. I don't know. I think it's important to tackle who this group really is and what they've done over the years and what they're continuing to do, because we're currently living through their end game. He was intimately tied to not just the formation, but the trajectories of two of the most influential foundations in the world today, the Clinton Foundation and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Maybe the idea that Jeffrey Epstein is middle management is unsettling to people, but it's also, I guess, in a sense, potentially useful because there's so much public interest in the Epstein case, perhaps for the wrong reasons because of, you know, the salaciousness of what most people know about it. There's a lot of people in the public that want to know more about Epstein and at a deep level, even if they don't know the details of it, know that there's something very wrong with the way he allegedly died, the alleged client list, and all sorts of things like that. So there's definitely people that want to know more.
Jeremy Nell and Germ Warfare on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Google and Facebook, they don't sell you anything. They sell you.
Facebook constantly manipulates their users. They do it by the things that they insert into the news feeds. And they do it by the types of hosts they allow their users to see.
It's what Google and Facebook are doing on a regular basis by suppressing stories, by steering us towards other stories rather than the stories we're actually seeking. That's the real manipulation that's going on.
I was a design ethicist at Google, where I studied how do you ethically steer people's thoughts.
It will always favor one online music service over another and one candidate over another.
Google and Facebook has the power to undermine democracy without us knowing that democracy has been undermined.
There's what I call the creepy line, and the Google policy about a lot of these things is to get right up to the creepy line but not cross it.
Google crosses the creepy line every day.
Discover how society is manipulated by Google and Facebook. The creepy line at salemnow.com.
Mainstream media censors, smears, and intimidates those telling the truth. We mandate that the truth be told. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back. I'm here with Michael Gray Griffith of Cafe Locked Out, and they've also set up their own social media site, clo.social. Go check it out. It's a new way to build new communities and be free of the censorship. Now, it used to be, Michael, that we would hear ads or promos on TV promoting the news back in the 80s up here in New South Wales. Brian Henderson was the famous newsreader, and there was another Brian down there in Victoria. And the promo that we heard was something that went along the lines of, Brian told me. Brian told me so. I know everything there is to know because Brian told me so. Now, that's kind of what is still going on today in the mainstream. We saw at the beginning of COVID, CNN's Chris Cuomo, who's no longer there, he came out and said, we will tell you what you need to know about this. And Jacinda Ardern, the Prime Minister of New Zealand, said the government will provide you the truth. And it seems that those who are tarred with the brush and the insult of being called conspiracy theorists, because that's what you do, put down someone who knows more than you, have never read so much. The people that I know that are tarred with this brush are the most avid readers I've ever met. They will send unbelievable amounts of content, clips to watch, and often you've got to reply and say, listen, tell me what it's about. I can't watch the next 12 hours of stuff that you've sent me. I just don't have the time. Send me a sentence, just a sentence to tell me what it's about. And I think, who has really been hoodwinked here? Those that are ignorant and trust the system, or those that read absolutely everything and all seem to be coming to very similar conclusions?
Yeah, it's really interesting. You know, I people say, look, just watch this. It only goes for 2 hours. And you're going, okay. You have one that goes for like 30 seconds. And I do think we have information overload coming from all sides. And I do think there's never been a more important time to critically think. Just critically think both sides, you know. If you hear things coming down the social media tubes, you know, the rabbit hole tubes, and you're thinking, well, I don't know. I like to focus just where I stand on what I can see, hear, and feel in my environment, which is why I love interviewing ordinary Australians. A man called me today, and he wants to be interviewed next week. And he's talked to me before, and he had an adverse injury. And he said, Michael, my heart's decaying. I can feel it. And I want to document it. in case I don't make it.
Wow.
And I'm thinking, wow. I'm thinking, yep, let's do it, you know?
Yep.
And so I try to work on the little things. There's a theory in New York, how they fixed the lawlessness in New York, is the broken window theory, where before, if you had a broken window, you call the police, they wouldn't care, it's just a broken window. But then they got in a new police commissioner, and he said, no, find out who broke that window, penalize them. And then after a third strike, they go to jail for life, which is pretty severe. But what it is working on the little things fixed the bigger problem. And if I can interview this man who wants to talk honestly about his situation, who knows who he'll affect? You know what I mean? This is like an Anne Frank, because you hear of 6 million Jews died, but Anne Frank consolidates, we lost this amazing young woman to tyranny. Mm. That's where we are now. There's people out there suffering constantly. Their lives have been destroyed. Another person I met last night says she's trying to get a job because her small business is dying, but she needs a vaccination for every single job she applies for, and she refuses to take it. And yes. Well, she doesn't know what she's going to do, and I'm meeting these all the time, so I'm hoping she'll talk, you know, because this is the truth. They're talking about bringing in migrants. This person is healthy. She's had COVID, so she's naturally immune for the rest of her life. I did an interview. I went to Professor Jay. I probably be taking names.
Bhattacharya.
But yeah. Sorry, I'm terrible with these names. Forgive me.
I've been practicing it all week.
And he said it's conclusive now that if you've had COVID and got over it, you've got natural immunity. You've got the best immunity. He says they've proven that now. So just on that alone, since most of us have had COVID, the mandate should be dropped.
Yes, indeed. We're just going to pause for news headlines. We'll come back with a whole lot more with Michael. You're listening to TNT Radio.
Matt Boylan here with a look at your TNT headlines. Police in the US have made a chilling discovery after finding a dismembered body stuffed inside two suitcases inside a New York City apartment. 9 million Australians are being warned of a heightened risk of identity theft after their personal information was stolen in the largest cyber attack the country has ever seen. And at least 90 people have drowned as flooding cripples Jigawa State in Nigeria.
God, you're amazing. You're a much better listener than my wife. You're always there for me. I think I may be in love.
Where is she?
It's not what it seems. I was talking to...
Who's the tramp I heard you talking to?
That was my Alexa, sweetie.
Well, she sounds like a tramp.
Fall in love with news and talk all over again with your smart device. Just tell it to play.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the show. Michael, I read Rudy Giuliani's book, Leadership, some years ago after September 11, and I read what he was talking about in what you were mentioning before about the idea of the zero tolerance policy that was introduced when he was the mayor of New York. Interestingly, what he said in the book was he said it was less about zero tolerance and more about mobility. And the broken windows theory that he introduced was quite interesting because he said that if someone was to break a window or someone was to urinate in the street, they had a sort of a lower regard for society and community, and you would more than likely find that they were wanted on other prior charges. And this is how they were able to sort of round up the usual suspects, so to speak, just through that separate behaviour. And it was through those combination of things that they very quickly were able to sort New York out. Now, of course, Giuliani was made famous well before that, and he became mayor on the back of the popularity from it was his working to bring down the five New York crime families through the RICO Act, which was profoundly a game changer. And it was the idea that he could get them all on racketeering from the idea that they were all working together. Now, what I found interesting was that Trump, 20 years later or 30 years later, who Not many people would know this, but Trump was actually an FBI informant way back in those days, and it was through the access of his Atlantic City casino that apparently was used in evidence to round up these gangsters. So clearly Trump was linked to being one of the good guys, and that's probably how they knew he was one of these people, because he didn't want to be living in a community in New York that was run by the mafia. Sadly, of course, that the politicians in many ways have become the new gangsters, and so we're now in a whole new age, which is putting us where we are today. But what I love about that story is the fact that it's Trump who employed Giuliani as his personal lawyer, who's now, of course, been disbarred. But that's another story based on another nonsense. However, it shows me that they were working on a very similar business model to deal with the same type of corruption going forward. Yeah. It's the same characters in the play, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's, I mean, the things coming from America now, incredible. You know, I have a lawyer friend who said, we're looking at the Gestapo stuff now. You know, that's where we are with the FBI. It's like Gestapo. You know, they're keeping tabs on everybody now. This is the part of the war. And that's what I'm saying. A lot of that is so big, it overwhelms everybody. So people sort of get disillusioned and don't fight because they think, oh, it's so big. How can I possibly fight? And that's why I think it's important to, you can access all this stuff, information, but concentrate on the battle in your area. You know what I mean? Mm. Concentrate on fixing the broken window in your area and let's see what happens from there. You know? And that's what these guys in Chihuahua are doing.
That's exactly right. And the interesting part of it is that they are leading by example, and they've learnt that example by other people who have also led by example. And that, of course, is the work that you've done with Cafe Lockdown. What I'd like to do, Michael, is just sort of kind of a bit of a review and just ask you about some of your memories of some of the wonderful interviews that you've conducted and who it is that really changed you. And I know that most of the people that you've interviewed are just normal, average people in the street, but you've talked about these in the past, but I'm really interested to hear about some of your favorites here and what it was that that really woke you up, because I know just talking to you that you yourself have grown immensely over the last few years. The things that you never thought were possible are actually appearing before your eyes. Who might it be that has really profoundly affected you?
One of the most profound interviews was a woman called Tabitha, who is the assistant for Malcolm Roberts, and she's from Romania. And her brother, 17 at the time, was a part of the revolution. And she was talking about how he left home, and his mother said, look, if you go out there, they'll kill you, because at that time, the soldiers were ordered to shoot at the civilians, and they were doing it. And basically, he was of the philosophy, give me freedom or give me death. And so they'd reached, basically, the government had reached this point where the people weren't going to take it anymore. And she said that how they won is that the soldiers, after a few days, found their humanity and could not keep shooting their own people. And they turned their guns on their leaders, and communism fell. But the passion, I'd just done an interview with Tricky, which was an amazing interview. I'm a massive fan of him. And finding out about, you know, how he came into the movement. And then this woman was waiting. I didn't know anything about her. And she came in, and then she just did this interview that blew me away. She wept in it, but her defiance. She was going, you cannot comply with, and if you don't fight now, you'll be fighting over the dead, but it'll cost dead bodies in the future, you know. And we play her wherever. What we do now is when we go to a town, if people want to watch it, we play a documentary, which is snippets of the interviews put together, and Tabitha is always a part of that, and she always profoundly moves people. But another interview, we were coming through Coffs Harbour, we stopped to get fuel, and people could follow us on a map. And Wendy, who one of my companions, said, look, we've got this woman with four white doves, wants us to release white doves. And I was really tired. We'd been traveling a long way, and we're trying to get back to Melbourne for my court case, and we're pretty exhausted. And I was thinking, yeah, okay. Anyway, so I went and interviewed in her car. What I met was a nurse who had lost her job because of the mandate. And then she'd gone to town. She had a mask exemption, but she hadn't taken the certificate or the paperwork with her. So she gets arrested, and two burly policemen smash her down to the floor and break her sternum. God. And then she's taken to the police station, where this other police officer in charge of the place, because she's refusing to answer questions, and they won't give her any medical treatment. This police officer goes in and goes, "I hope you die." God. Now, this woman is slight, petite, and in her 60s. You know, and I'm listening to this interview, and I'm tearing up in this car, because this woman, she also had a foster child that she got at 4, and up until when she was arrested, he was 14. They took that child off her. She can't foster. They just took the child. So it was devastating what she'd been through. And then the judge in court said, okay, I agree that the police used too much force. I agree that you did have a mask exemption, but I need to make an example of you. And so he charged her the fine plus all the court costs, and then they put all her details in the local paper, so the whole area knew who she was.
Goodness.
And yet she goes through all this, and she refuses to meet them on their level. And so she wants to release these white doves as a symbol of freedom, a symbol of hope. And so she's been defiant that way. You know what I mean? She could have become embittered. She could have,
yes.
But instead, even though she was full of tears, she's determined to remain herself. Now, we play this interview usually at the end of these documentaries. And when it's finished, I see grown men come up and they go to thank me and they tear up, because she is the broken heart of Australia.
Yes.
When in our upbringing did it suddenly become okay for police officers to assault a woman, especially an old woman, like that? I can't remember that being passed.
Never.
And then continue the assault. And then the establishment assaults her, and yet she refuses to buckle, and she goes through all this misery. And then she, on the side of the road with all these trucks passing, I took a video of her releasing this white dove. And we play that at the end. And, yeah, it really affects men. And we're hoping that it wakes men up to go, we are now in a society where this is happening. John Wayne would be getting out there punching everyone in the face. I'm sorry. But you can see it. You can see him just grabbing one of these cops, punching them out. And
yes.
I feel we have to get back to a level of decency. And she is one of the lines in the sand. And I've interviewed several women in their 60s and 70s, even 80s, who have been assaulted by police. I've even talked to Mary, who was the woman who got pepper sprayed in Melbourne, pushed over and pepper sprayed. I've spoken to her as well. But she wouldn't do an interview, but she spoke to me. And that's, to me, we've already crossed the line in the sand. Our thing now is to get back to a society where that never happens. And so she had a profound effect on me. In fact, you know, resonates deeply in you. So I have interviewed, like, The Undertaker from England, and I have interviewed other doctors and people of note, and Senator Rennick, and we might be having an interview with Reiner Fulmick coming up. But I really think that these interviews with ordinary Australians who are refusing to give up their Australian spirit is where the real joy of what I'm doing is. It gives me real purpose, and I hope it resonates with someone, you know.
For someone who spent his career in performance, like what you've done. One wonders if this really is your finest moment, Michael, that the ability to go out there and to become, as you said, the chronicler, the documentary maker here. Would you think that this is the best work that you've ever done?
Do you know, I don't even think of it as work. I just think of it as, prior to this, I wasn't a religious man, per se. I thought maybe there was something I was agnostic. Now, I really believe that this is a battle for the soul. And I don't know what God is. I'm too small on this thing to know what God is. But if there is a God, if this compass in our soul is pointing towards goodness, then I'm trying my best, with all my failings, to head in that direction. And the beauty I get back is it gives me a sense of purpose.
Yes.
And so I try not to think that way about work. I just do what I'm doing. And the real reason behind it is not so much for fame, but I cannot leave this country and the direction we are currently heading to my children, or to even your children or anyone's children. I can't do it without fighting. I adore my tribe, and I would rather die with them and go into the darkness with them than live with the other tribe on my knees for the rest of my life. I can't do it. And so whatever happens, I'm faithless. I had an extraordinary moment. We brought Dr. William Bay down to do a live show, we call it a no-go show. We just basically get everyone talking freely. For a couple of hours. And we always have audio problems. And I said to him, we always have audio problems. And before he left, I said to him, can we do something I've never done before with another person ever, including a man? He said, can we pray? And he said, yeah, let's do that.
Yeah.
And look, the audio worked perfectly. I don't know if it was God day. Okay, finally, you just had to ask. I don't know. But I have a thing of faith in me that I'm just going to head in this direction and keep doing this work until either I can't do it anymore or whatever happens. I'm just a part of a tide that's heading back into the face of the COVID tide and the tyranny tide that's swept the country. And I just feel privileged to be a part of that fight. And so, yeah, I don't think of it in the terms that you mentioned. You know,
no, but it's it makes total sense, and it's a beautiful way to express it because it's beyond any sort of body of work now. It's something else, and I go back to a quote that I often use. That's right. Find your obsession, make it your profession.
That's what epic was.
Yes.
I was interviewing people on the Thursday, but the streamers all arrived on the Friday. But on the Thursday, people were arriving, and I realized, hey, I'm the only streamer here at the moment, so I've got to start streaming. So I'm sticking my camera, and everyone's coming to the door, and everyone said in Epic, I said, why'd you come? I have to come. Why? I don't know. I have to come. It's cool. You know, so this, other people have it in the movement, and we're failing, and we're doing this, and we've got all our other problems that we're doing, but there's a calling, and that's very different from anything I've ever experienced before in my life, where you're just going, what should we do this week? Let's find a new play or something. This is profoundly different, and there's faith behind it. You know, it's faith.
Yes.
I actually met some priests yesterday at this conference, and I ended up telling them off because I said, everyone goes on about the doctors betraying us. I said, you guys have betrayed us.
Yes.
This is the soul of our country is in hazard, and if you guys won't speak, then why should anybody else speak? And I said, and you're not speaking. You're not speaking out. You closed the churches. You know, we need you now. Our whole society, our whole Christian society is built on a man, whether he's real or not, who wouldn't shut up. He wouldn't shut up, and they killed him for it. But now, we're in that time now of struggle. And yeah, if you're going to be dethroned, if you're going, well, that's the price, buddy. We've all lost jobs. We've all lost our careers. This is the fight. You've got to fight. And otherwise, what are you? You're wearing your black and your white thing. And I said, and even if you haven't fought to now, you can join us now because the greatest thing about our soul is they shine best through redemption. You can redeem yourself at any time. Go, yep, I did this way, I screwed up, come back to us. We don't care. Join the fight. You'll be better for it. Struggling and the struggle we're facing and the great work that you guys are doing ultimately will build a better country because we fought for it, you know? It's ours, you know?
Yeah. Well said. It is truly inspiring. We're going to quickly pause for our final break of the hour, and when we come back, we're going to learn a little bit more about the next No Goat show that's coming up for the team at Cafe Lockdown. This is TNT Radio.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
Who says politicians can't keep their campaign promises? In an apparent attempt at matching the record of President Donald Trump, who kept virtually every campaign promise he made from the time he came down the escalator to the time he raised his right hand and took the oath of office, racist New York Attorney General Letitia James is trying to keep her campaign promises too. You might recall that James, while seeking the office that in New York State is typically seen as a stepping stone to the governorship, promised to go into work, sue Donald Trump all day, go home at night and come back the next day and do it all over again. She even went so far as cooing in the ear of a prospective constituent who asked if James would sue Donald Trump for her. Oh yes, I'm gonna sue Donald Trump. I'm gonna be a pain in his ass. Well, she's doing it again, folks. James brought yet another lawsuit against the president, his children, and his companies. This has got to end. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
Close your eyes and think about this. Imagine taking your child to school where all the other kids have access to textbooks, paper, and pencils, but your child is only allowed to listen. Would you be okay with that? That's what it means to be blind. For every 100 books a sighted child can access, a blind child has access to less than 5. Help put the world at the fingertips of vision-impaired kids. Donate now at braillehouse.org.au.
Democracy is under attack. Western governments are trying to regulate the internet to shut down free speech. The UK government controls the internet. Disagree with what government is saying and you'll be shut down and could face severe penalties. To find out more, go to ofcom.org.uk. Lighting the fuse for freedom. This is TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Jason Q Citizen and Friends program. Look, I have to just put it out there. I think that today has been just an absolutely amazing show. I'm very, very proud of the guests that we're able to get onto our program. And Michael, you blow me away yet again as you continue to do in the community. And in the last hour, we had Alexandra Marshall from The Spectator, who put a whole new spin on many ideas that I hadn't even thought of before. And this is part of the magnificent situation that we're in right now, that we are completely carving out an entire new world for each other and ourselves at the moment. And I'm reminded, as you spoke of that wonderful lady, which we'll call the Dove Lady, and I believe her name was Bernie. The profound difficulties that she went through, being made an example, even though the law didn't provide for it, but the horrible judge that decided to do that and shame and embarrass her, and she was beyond and was bigger. Many years ago, I was introduced to a book called Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. This was a Holocaust survivor, one who saw his entire family perish in the Holocaust, and yet he went on to live his best life and write a book about it. One would think, how could you possibly, if you'd lost your entire family, go on? Many people would probably think that the best thing that they could do is just perish with them, or perhaps have some survivor guilt, which is another common thing that people suffer when everyone around them is killed in a plane crash, for example. It must be the most horrible feeling. And yet Viktor went on to flourish and to educate with this magnificent book. And some of the quotes, for example, he said the death rate in the week before Christmas 1944 and New Year's 1945 increased in camp beyond all previous experience. I mean, imagine that late in the war and the death rate is going up and not down. You'd be wondering if it would ever end and if you were ever going to survive. And he also said things like, it did not really matter what we expected from life, but rather what life expected from us. Life ultimately means taking the responsibility to find the right answer to its problems and to fulfill the tasks which it constantly sets for the individual. What you have experienced, no power on earth can take from you. I mean, imagine, Michael, I mean, what we're seeing now couldn't possibly compute to being inside one of these death camps as they were. But of course, all of us watching were very, very nervous when we saw these quarantine facilities appear, because the parallel could well have been drawn. So none of us who were actually observing and doing all the reading and watching and participation would be underwhelmed by anything there, but these are worthy comparisons. But what we're seeing now is that beautiful human capacity, that resilience that's coming through. And we're all reminded that even in profound loss, and there's nothing worse than losing a loved one, but the only way that you can seem to get past it is to realize that we must find the joy in our daily lives. And if we cannot, then we have to take the lesson, whatever that lesson turns out to be. And this is the beautiful part of reflection. This program today with Michael is serving as one of these reflection points for many people who are listening in. And that's why we're talking about the interviews that Michael has given in the past, and of course, looking forward to the next ones that this magnificent documentary maker is doing. Michael, your work is just simply exquisite. Can you tell us a little bit more about what's coming up in your next No Goat show, who you've got coming up on September 28?
We're going to Warrnambool. There's a man there called Robert who's asked us to come out there. He's organising it, which is terrific. And we're going up there with Dr. Catherine Fines, who actually goes to a lot of the marches. She actually resigned her as a doctor rather than go through all the crap that in the last few years. She's outspoken, she's articulate, and she's very brave. And what we do with these no-goat shows is we don't have speeches with everybody listening, which is you know, I'm not putting that sort of thing down. We try to get conversations going, get audiences talking, and it's amazing how it fires up an audience. We've done 3 live ones now, all have filled up the joints where they're in, and the people hang, the goats are 2 hours, but the people hang around almost for 2 hours afterwards, because everyone is suddenly talking because they're infected by courage and free speech. They're just loving it. And I really love being a part of it. So that's on the 28th. And what was it? We were in the Uniting Church, but they kicked us out. They looked it up and no, they didn't want us. So they kicked us out. So, but rather than giving in, Robert found another venue, St. Pius, P-I-U-S, St. I think the S is science, the St. Pie at 78 Morris Road, Warrnambool. We're in the function centre there. And, so we're all driving up and we're excited. You know, there's real resistance in the country towns. I don't know if it's because critical thinking is more important there, because they can't wait for the government to fix everything. You know, so I mean, they've got to fix it themselves. I don't know, but there are towns that are very compliant, and then there's towns with great resistance movements. So we're excited to see what will happen when we get there. And, I think the next thing after that is we'll be, Wendy and I want to be touring Victoria. We're going to, this weekend, we're going to Colac, because another great group called the Billboard Battalion, these dairy farmers, who put placards on their utes and go driving into town sharing the truth. They're an amazing group. And so they're coming to Colac on the weekend, and we're going there to try and interview them and celebrate their courage. And that's all we're selling, is courage. And selling isn't the right word, but that's it. That's what you're doing, you know, is celebrating and spreading courage, which is, fear is the virus, courage is the cure. It truly is. I so admire you guys. I feel quite honored to be on this radio station, actually, because it's so lovely to have the ability to speak, and even if we're wrong, just to speak. We don't have to be right. Free speech is about speaking, debating. Say, you know, you're wrong here, and why you're wrong. this world of censorship, even the censorship should be enough to have people wake up and go, we can't live in a world of this much censorship.
Yes. But,
yeah. And so anyway, that's where we are here. We're just sort of picking up our pieces. I do a show in the morning online called Clo Mornings where, because everyone, a lot of people are doing evenings, and I thought, well, I'll do a morning show 9 till 10 and interview anyone who wants to come on just to try give people something to talk about during the day and some courage. And everyone who speaks, everyone who has the courage to speak, that courage spreads. And so, yeah, so that's what we're doing at the moment.
Oh, that's wonderful. That just sounds fantastic. And how can people watch that show?
Oh, you find it on Facebook, just on under, we've got a Cafe Lockdown. It's also on Rumble, Cafe Lockdown on Rumble. And it's called Clone Morning. So it's from 9 till 10, usually goes over. But it's in, and we're open to anyone, whether you've got an adverse reaction, whether you've lost your business, whether you have an idea, whether you've got a new business you're setting up where you don't want to discriminate and you want to help promote it, anything to help in to empower people to go, you do not have to be a passenger on a train. That's not, we're in Melbourne, you can feel like we're all passengers on this runaway train that's corroding around us, it's Dan's train, and it's just leading somewhere. We're not. We're not. We're Victorians. We're Australians. We're human beings. And we're here now. And this is our time in the light. And we can define where we're going. And all you have to do to join in that fight is stand up. Stand up. Join a march. Join a freedom party. Share some things on Facebook and join the band or Facebook club.
Yes, exactly. Well said. We have we've run out of time, unfortunately, Michael. We've got to go to the news, but it's been terrific to have Michael Gray Griffith from Cafe Locked Out. News next, followed by Rick Munn. You're listening to TNT Radio.